You are listening to Sheep Might Fly, a podcast of serialized fiction written and read by Tansy Rayner Roberts. This week, our story of the Frost Fair Affair continues. The Frost Fair Affair, Chapter 4, Discretion Best Served Cold. The Frost Fair was all very entertaining, but getting properly warm afterwards took more than a couple of cosy charms, even with soup and a steaming cup of chocolate for supper. Nim felt the need to retire to her room with the fireplace blazing and a quilted bed jacket wrapped over her nightgown. Annoyed, but clearly in the wrong, Mrs. Fenchurch had agreed to replace the pamphlets within 2 or 3 days, when she had time between runs of souvenir cards. It was more than frustrating. Even more frustrating was Juno's refusal to tell Nim why she was so disturbed by that signature in the ledger. Still, this was a minor setback. The last thing Nim wanted was to rush the delicate business of enacting social change. Tomorrow, she had an invitation to supper with the Countess of Balmody's book club, which according to Juno was her best route to the Secret Senate, or the Great Discretion. The Countess of Balmody, as one of the Queen's ladies-in-waiting, resided on the court side of the River Scamander, which meant traversing the Frost Fair once again. Juno had arranged for a horse-drawn sleigh, which came with fur wrappings and hot cups of spiced cider, as they were dragged across the river. It was one of the more civilized forms of travel that Nim had ever experienced, though it could only be achieved on a duchess's budget. "I can't believe you didn't read the book," she teased Juno as they slid along the ice, surrounded by the bright lanterns and glittering entertainments of the Frost Fair at night. "It's a book club!" Juno shrugged. "It's one of those books about castles. They're all the same. A governess, a ghost, far more secret passages than is reasonably credible, a long-lost family secret, and a murder that everyone has forgotten to solve by the end. You still have to read it." Nim was faintly outraged by Juno's cavalier attitude. "Do I, though?" Juno, as ever, was amused by Nim taking anything seriously. As they divested themselves of their ungainly layers of wool and fur in the foyer of the Countess's apartment, which at 3 floors high was larger than some townhouses, a familiar figure came towards them, Lady Liesel of Sandwich, wearing sparkling snowflake earrings and a bold celestial blue robe, trimmed with white satin, topped off by a crown turban. "I thought you were travelling," said Nim as they embraced. "If anyone asks, we were lucky with the crosswinds," said Liesel, looking innocent. "No bribes were paid to portal watchmen in the least." "Why, you've turned into quite the rebel," said Juno. "I'm impressed." "Who has time to travel by sea when there are social niceties to overturn and husbands to catch?" said Liesel, with a sniff. "Oh, look, how sweet! Nim brought a copy of the book!" "It's a book club," said Nim. "Don't tell me you didn't read it either." "It's a novel set in some exotic corner of the continent by some girl our age who has only ever read books about the continent," said Liesel. "And there's a ghost in it, probably." She tucked her arm in both of theirs. "Never mind the book. You'll never guess who's here. It's quite the scandal." By the time they reached the receiving parlour, up a spiral staircase, Liesel and Juno were deeply immersed in their gossip exchange. The two of them had forged a close friendship since Juno beat Liesel to Cousin Henry. In the teacup aisles, ballads had been written for far less than the catching of an eligible duke in matrimony out from under the nose of a higher-ranked lady of the gentry. Nim was not offended to be left out of their chatter. She extricated herself from Liesel's elbow at the first opportunity. Juno's friendship was like a warm blanket that wrapped itself in layers around your head in the middle of the night. It was refreshing to breathe for a moment, without the need for constant conversation. The parlour was full of ladies and fine magic. Wall sconces lit up the room, like burning candles that never ran out of wick or wax. Shimmers of charm work appeared like shadows, here and there amongst the pretty frocks and elegant decor. Even these, the wealthiest and highest ranked ladies of town, all used minor illusions to cover up small flaws, or to make their natural beauty shine that little bit brighter. Their hostess had provided magic displays for entertainment. A shelf of dancing mice near the window, wearing hats that made them look like midwinter gnomes. There was a portrait of an ancestor over the main fireplace, who bowed to every lady that passed by and occasionally recited a verse of poetry. Liesel was not the only one wearing snowflake earrings. The frost fair had taken fire among the ladies of town and court, with winter-themed fashion very much the order of the day. Everything was blue and silver and crystalline, trimmed in white fur or satin or ruffled gauze. One young matron showed off a blown glass locket that had been made on the ice, and another cooed over a hair brooch featuring a horse-drawn sleigh. Neem accepted a cup of tea, embracing her old wallflower identity, as the conversation and power games unrolled before her. She had always felt like an outsider at these gatherings of urban nobility, even as a daughter of the esteemed Seaborn family, the niece to a duchess and, more recently, the cousin to a duke. This particular crowd featured many ladies of influence. Neem had not seen so many wives of the Court of Lords since the sewing circles hosted by her aunt, the former Duchess of Storm, in the years before her death. Neem recalled a parade of important older ladies arriving at Stormbolt with beautiful sewing baskets that no one ever seemed to open. It occurred to her only now that if there was a secret senate of ladies, then her mother and aunts must have been card-carrying members, at least until the disgrace of last season. And that explained the looks and whispers that had been thrown her way recently over porcelain cups and plates of Angelica sponge. Embrace notoriety, she reminded herself, though her natural instinct was to flee to a corner with her book. At least it means they know who you are. It will be useful to your mission. There you are! Juno flung herself at Neem, carrying a plate with three kinds of tiny sandwich upon it. I must introduce you to our hostess. So much red hair, murmured the Countess of Balmody, in a tone which might have conveyed either envy or disapproval. Either way, there wasn't much Neem could do about it. Red gold hair and determined chins ran in her family. Clearly a Seaborn, agreed the Countess's companion, who was introduced as Mrs. Threnod. Both were ladies of a certain age, which was to say, they could have been grandmothers. If they were, you could be sure you would never hear a word about their grandchildren, and they would speak of their sons as if they were feckless youths, even if they were men of 40 years or more. The Countess wore deep navy, her silver hair pinned high, and an old family diamond collar with a snowflake design that must have been made for one of the earliest frost fairs nearly a century ago. Easy enough to follow, or indeed to lead fashions that came around every decade or so, when you had a manor full of family jewels. Her companion's outfit was all in shades of grey, far less showy. Mrs. Threnod wore an antique lace fichu that not only covered her neckline but buttoned all the way up her long neck. "Is your mother well?" asked the Countess, which was honestly a warmer greeting than Neame had expected, given the frostiness of that lady's expression. "She's enjoying a winter on the Isle of Bath," said Neame, not needing to add the detail that Mama had retreated to Bath months before winter began and showed no sign of dislodging herself, to the great dismay of Mr. Seaborne. "That's the spirit," said the Countess, nodding with approval. "Going to ground after family troubles, it's the best way to handle such things." "Absolutely the best way," agreed Mrs. Threnod. The two ladies glared at Neame, as if expecting her to offer an explanation of why she too was not hiding her shame from the world. Juno, whose Duchess powers were clearly diminished in the face of such antique disdain, was the first to break. "I positively begged my dear Miss Seaborne to winter with me," she burst out. "My husband the Duke is so distracted at this time of year with the duties of state." Mrs. Threnod leaned forward, ignoring the Duchess of Storm. "I hear you fancy yourself as something of a writer, Miss Seaborne. Quite extraordinary." "A writer?" said Neame, confused at this train of conversation. "Why, hardly at all, except—" She froze. Mrs. Threnod pulled a small folded pamphlet from somewhere in her fichu and handed it to the Countess. "Something of a writer," she said, and laughed a croaky wheeze of a laugh. "Or so she thinks." Later, as they waited in the foyer for the sleigh to take them home, Neame was still furious. "Who do those old hags think they are?" she hissed to Juno as they pulled on layers of coats, gloves, overboots. "The most powerful ladies of influence in the city," Juno said pertly. "Why shouldn't I write a pamphlet? Why shouldn't I try to make the world better for ladies? Why should I have to grovel for their stamp of approval?" Neame stared at a window that opened out onto the snowy courtyard beyond the Countess's beautiful apartment. "Why should two ladies like ourselves have to travel at night in the snow when there must be half a dozen portals in this apartment, all for the convenience of men?" Juno pulled her fur hood down snugly over her hair. "You're not suggesting we do a leasel, are you? I don't think there's enough bribes in the world that could cover it up if we hijacked the Count of Balmedy's private portal." "We shouldn't have to bribe anyone," Neame muttered. "We are guests." "Don't take that dried-up old lemon face seriously," Juno assured her. "Your pamphlet was excellent. I read the whole thing, and you know I hardly ever read all the way to the end." It was two pages," said Neame, trying not to smile. "Exactly! Two whole pages!" I was riveted. "You have a compelling turn of phrase." How did she even get hold of it? That was what really worried Neame. Bad enough that some maid picked up my pamphlets by accident, but how did they get into the hands of the Countess and her secret senate so quickly? "Oh, darling," said Juno, "do you really think it was an accident? Look, Thomas is here." The two of them scurried out into the freezing air, walking like careful penguins, until Juno's chauffeur, Thomas, was able to boost them comfortably into the hired sleigh. "Not enough warming charms in the world," Juno sighed, burying her hands in her favourite fur-lined muff. "At least the river won't thaw tonight. But tomorrow I shall spend every minute in bed with hot chocolate. See if I don't." "You think someone stole my pamphlets deliberately," Neame said, "and distributed them among the ladies of the Secret Senate? Seems a rather odd choice to hijack my work and then do it for me."
"There's distribution, and then there's distribution," Juno said darkly as they set off into the night. "You only know of one copy that hit its mark, For all you know, the rest of them are kindling for someone's drawing room fire.
They had to wait for a while, halfway across the frozen river, as other traffic was waved through. The frost fair was still alive with customers and hucksters on either side of this transit channel, with fires and torches burning merrily, with the protective aid of enough spells, Neem hoped, to keep the heat from sending them all into the chilly drink. They set off again, finally. After a minute or two, Thomas had to yank hard on the reins as a surge of struggling pedestrians crossed in front of their horses' hooves.
"Ho there!" he called out in warning.
Juno elbowed Neem.
"Why, that's Mrs. Fenchurch, isn't it?"
Neem leaned over and saw the printer's wife, almost doubled over with the weight of the bundles she carried.
"Are you all right?"
"You're going back to Brill Street?" asked Juno. "We'll give you a lift." Mrs. Fenchurch made a token protest, but she was clearly exhausted from her day's work, while Juno was still fueled by her own outrage at the Countess of Balmody. Within moments, Thomas had tucked Mrs. Fenchurch into the sleigh with them and tied her parcels on the back.
"Do have some chocolate. You look done in," said Juno, with her usual careless generosity. "You aren't carrying that whole printing press home, are you?"
Mrs. Fenchurch looked suspicious of the Duchess's largesse, but accepted the cup she was handed.
"No, Your Grace," she muttered. "Paid the watchman a shilling to keep my eye on it overnight after I sent the children home with my sister. Couldn't leave all this stock at the stall, though. It'd get half-inched."
"I suppose that's true," said Juno thoughtfully, "whereas stealing something as heavy as a printing press would cause enough ruction that at least the watchman would notice."
"Aye," said Mrs. Fenchurch, her cheeks pinkening up a little as she sipped on the chocolate. "No one's getting that iron beast of ours off the river without knocking down half a dozen other tents as they go."
"I'd buy a ticket to that show," said Juno.
"Thomas, to Brill Street."
"I can walk once we're on dry land," Mrs. Fenchurch said quickly. "It's tricky to get across the river on foot, that's all, with so many folk crossing at once."
"Nonsense," said Juno. "The streets are quite clear enough, and it will barely take us out of our way."
She then set about the immense task of putting the printer's wife at her ease, a Herculean task, since Mrs. Fenchurch had her defences up to maximum. The suspicion on the face of the printer's wife deepened as Juno rattled on, then began to ease once it became obvious that Juno was none too subtly attempting to find out if Mrs. Fenchurch remembered anything further about the maid who had half-inched Neem's pamphlets. Clearly it was easier for Mrs. Fenchurch to believe they would come to her assistance because they wanted something from her, rather than from the goodness of their hearts.
"Flaxen hair, a worsted apron, and an eye patch," said Juno with great satisfaction, as she and Neem finally returned to Stormbolt, dropping their outer layers as well as their warming charms. "Now all we have to do is find that maid, and the mystery is nearly solved."
"I think she was pulling your leg about the eye patch," said Neem.
"Oh yes, but I did enjoy the expression on her face as she came up with it."
"I've been thinking about this all wrong," said Neem, as they headed up the staircase, grateful to be indoors. "The lack of portal travel is an annoying inconvenience for us. But we have every luxury at our fingertips if we wish. Boats and carriages and furs and warming charms. What about the other women in the world? What about the men, even, who can't afford to pay for a public portal?"
"Neem," said Juno, "this is beginning to sound like it's not a campaign at all, but a revolution."
Neem said nothing, but her heart rose at the thought of it. Revolution. Wasn't that a better legacy for the Seaborn family than last season's terrible scandal? Wasn't it time she did something useful with all the advantages she had been given? How very freeing it was to be notorious.
"Your Grace," murmured the maid who met them on the landing, The Duke of Storm would like to see you both before you retire for the night.
Oh, husbands, said Juno.
Very well, if we must.
Cousin Henry inhabited the room that his mother, the old Duchess, had always referred to as the cigar parlour. This was the place where gentlemen withdrew after dinner, seeking a respite from the company of female relatives. Such rooms generally held books, billiards, and brandy, with an emphasis on the brandy.
Neame had set foot in this particular cigar parlour once, as a child, dared by Cousin Metis, but never as an adult. Juno appeared unsurprised at being drawn into such a masculine domain. Clearly hers was a modern marriage.
Come in," called Henry cheerfully. He was arranged on an enormous sofa which he shared with two of his hounds. A familiar bound edition rested on his lap, the same novel that had inspired tonight's so-called book club gathering.
"Gad, this is a good book! 3 ghosts and 12 secret passages!
I'm glad someone's getting use of it," said Juno, leaning over to give him a careful kiss without disturbing the hounds.
"Did you want to say good night, my dear?"
"Ah, well," said Henry. "Thornbury had better explain."
Neame looked up in surprise to see her favourite spellcracker move from where he had been standing still, near the curtains.
"Goodness, you're tricksy," said Juno, putting a hand to her chest. "I didn't see you there at all."
"A useful skill," said Mr. Thornbury, exchanging a private nod with Neame. She rather loved his quiet way of noting her presence without fuss when they met in the company of others. Still, he looked awfully serious tonight.
"What's wrong?" she asked. Thornbury sighed.
"A satirical print has been doing the rounds, and it may affect your campaign, Miss Seaborn. Rather catastrophically."
"Oh, really?" said Juno. "As the lady who was the subject of rather a lot of teacup duchess cartoons a few months ago, not to mention that dreadfully popular print depicting me as a buccaneer who stole Henry's heart, I rather think I am an expert on rising above such things. How bad could it be?"
Neame had featured in some of those cartoons too, though mostly as part of a chorus of red-headed seaborn witches. She had a sinking feeling that, from the look on her Thornbury's face, this was much worse than that.
"The print is about the portal campaign," Thornbury admitted, "but it doesn't feature either of you. It depicts the Queen."
Thank you for listening to Sheep Might Fly. You can sign up to my author newsletter for updates, follow me on Twitter at TansyRR or at Sheep Might Fly. Find me on Facebook at TansyRR Books. And if you like this podcast, consider supporting me at Patreon, where you can receive all kinds of cool rewards, early ebooks, and exclusive stories for a small monthly pledge. See you next week.